Hello and welcome to the Bingeables podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinwin
and Mati.
Welcome back, Mati, to the Bingeables podcast. We are here to talk about HBO's tech comedy, Silicon Valley.
Thanks for having me again. It's been minutes.
Excited
to get to talk about it again. So, as Chinlin said, this is the spoiler-filled episode on Silicon Valley. So this is your first and only spoiler warning for everything Silicon Valley, seasons 1 through its series finale in season 6.
So for this deep dive, we're going to talk about Silicon Valley season by season. And in the past, whenever I did episodes like this with a guest, I think I've done it like season by season or character development before. Mati and I had a quick talk prior to this recording that we thought the best way to talk about this was season by season. And because it's, you know, in the environment of startups in Silicon Valley, we thought it'd be really funny and cool to talk about the mistakes, blunders, flops that occurs for our protagonists every season. Let's get started with season 1. So for my big mistake slash blunder in season 1, I'm going to have to go with the Carver. So Pied Piper, I think this was like towards the end of the first half. Mm-hmm. Pied Piper hired a programmer known as the Carver. And it turns out the Carver is just this teenage guy who's hopped up on drugs so that he can get work done just in general. And he hacked into some bank infrastructure, and that's how he got his nickname, the Carver. It was ridiculous. He's like, what, 16?
Yeah, if that.
So the guys convince Richard that they need to hire someone to help work on their cloud integration. The Carver, I guess he didn't have his Adderall at the time, and he ends up making a huge mistake and inadvertently destroys the Pied Piper code that he was working on, and our protagonists had to end up revising or doing it all over again. I was just like, ooh, wrong call.
And this also leads to probably one of the funniest moments of the season one, in my opinion, which is when Richard has to try and get Adderall for him by talking to the neighborhood children. So Richard, of course, is always awkward, and he's interacting with these little kids, kind of asking them for drugs, and they end up giving him something that isn't Adderall, and he pays $50 for it. And so he tells Ehrlich that he got ripped off. So Ehrlich comes out and confronts the kids kind of as like Richard's bodyguard, and ends up just kind of smacking one of the kids across the face. And it's a whole little endeavor. And I think that's an example of one of those episodes that has just, it introduces a quick little problem. Here's a eccentric new character. The character's hilarious, memorable. We both know what you mean when you say the Carver. And it's a great little kind of contained episode.
I also loved that Richard is awkward all the way through. Like, he does learn his lessons, and he does experience some character development from start to end. But the personalities that make Richard is pretty consistent all through. He's an awkward person. He doesn't think before he talks. And sometimes he just talks way too much.
Yeah, and I would say that if anything, his character development throughout the series sort of makes him, it like hardens him in almost a way that makes him kind of a worse person, because he starts to, especially in maybe it's season 5 or 4 or something, he starts to lose his way a little bit morally. And it's interesting to see a character like that who is sort of this bumbling but, good-hearted person kind of get chipped away at by the system. And I think it's really stark to see him in season one and then see him in like what he's willing to do in seasons 5 and 6.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Actually, I'm so glad you brought that up. I wrote down some notes in my notebook when I was rewatching seasons, the entire show. And for season one, I wrote a quote that Ehrlich said to Richard pretty frequently at the beginning of season one. Ehrlich's best advice to Richard in season one was, "You need to be an asshole." And obviously Richard doesn't want to do that, but he learns the hard way that, you know, sometimes you have to be an asshole.
Yeah, and I mean, you can kind of see him almost turn into who, you know, ostensibly is the villain of the show. If the show has a villain, it's what's his name? I'm just spacing on it.
Gavin Belson.
Yeah, thank you. Gavin Belson. You can see him kind of turning into that asshole character. And mm-hmm. it's interesting. I mean, in the same way that Breaking Bad makes a person break bad, it's almost like this is breaking asshole. And it's Richard kind of realizing that he needs to be an asshole to do the things that this, you know, industry demands, which is, it's a pretty strong indictment on the Silicon Valley environment for such like a show that, like you said, is pretty light and relaxed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So my mistake is certainly it's a smaller one, so not quite as big of a blunder, but I thought it was really funny when at TechCrunch, Dinesh and Guilfoyle are kind of hanging out at their, you know, Pied Piper booth, and there's a really cute blonde girl from across the hall who asks first Guilfoyle and then Dinesh to kind of help fix her code for, I believe it's like a, you know, a baking app or something like that. And this girl is actually played by AJ Mashako, one of the Ali and AJ sisters. And so Dinesh kind of pours over AJ Mashako's code and is like, "Oh my God, this girl's amazing. She writes beautiful code. I love her because of her code." And then Guilfoyle tells him that, you know, he wrote that code and that Dinesh is falling in love with Guilfoyle's code. And so Dinesh ultimately can't go through with dating or hooking up with AJ Mashaka's character because he keeps thinking about Guilfoyle. So it's more of like a personal blunder here than it is at the company level.
Actually, I just thought of something else that I can't believe I almost forgot. This isn't so much Richard's mistake, more this is an Ehrlich thing. Remember when they were trying to do a logo and Ehrlich was like, "No, we gotta hire an artiste." So he hired Chewy and that first mural they did. Oh, God.
And it's a mural of Dinesh having sex with the Statue of Liberty, right?
Yeah, and it was very grotesque.
And the whole reason that they get that is because Ehrlich tells Chewy that Dinesh is Hispanic, even though he's obviously not. And that's why Chewy does it at such a reduced rate and is happy to do it, is because he likes the Hispanic representation in their company. So.
Oh, man. I mean, they were pretty far away on the street, so I guess from a really far distance, I could kind of see Dinesh looking a bit Hispanic.
Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, I'm just like, it's hilarious, but at the same time, it's just such a grotesque mural. And I'm just like, oh, man, and they live in this suburban neighborhood, and kids are going to see that? Oh, God.
Well, and then at the end of that episode, right, he does I don't know what you would call it, but like a minimalist version of the logo, and it's the exact same one that Richard draws out on a napkin. That they could have gotten hired, you know, somebody could have done that logo for like, you know, $50 instead of however much it took them to do it. And I think that that's really funny. And a recurring theme in this show is that there's a lot of these characters try. It's almost like they're trying to get do the hardest way possible to get everything done, almost in spite of themselves. And I think that that makes for a lot of really funny comedy.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, they... if you want quality, you end up paying more for it. And it's true in general, right? But
yeah,
it's really just a square and two peas. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, I can make that on Canva.
Yep. And it stays on the garage for the rest of the season. I noticed it in season 6 is it's still there. It's pretty funny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are we ready to move on to season 2?
Yeah.
All righty. So season 2, the blunder that I picked was Richard accidentally gives away Pied Piper's, like, infrastructure secrets. he writes stuff out on a whiteboard in front of some company. I forgot the original name of the company, but these people end up becoming Enframe, their competitor. So I can't remember which episode or why he's even in this room to begin with, but he gets, you know, annoyed, of course, and Richard's that guy who has to explain everything properly because he has to correct other people's mistakes. So he ends up giving away some of the infrastructure secrets, and I'm just like, oh, that totally came back to bite you in the butt. Dude, come on. Like, you're better than this.
I believe they're looking for investments or something like that, or to hire people or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I think what's great about it is that Jared and Ehrlich immediately pick up on what they're doing. I think they call it brain fucking, maybe, or something like that. And so they, like, pull Richard out and tell him, and as they're pulling Richard out, Dinesh and Guilfoyle start, like, further explaining the code. And I think it's a really funny, you know, juxtaposition between the engineer coders and then kind of the more savvier, at least social cue wise of and business savviness of Jared and Ehrlich. And I think it kind of highlights that each of these characters definitely has a role in the company, and the characters always act in very specific ways that are true to their character, I think, throughout the entire season. So.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So my blunder in season 2 is probably one of my favorite blunders of the entire series. This is...
it's a great one, guys. Oh my God. It's so memorable. And sorry, I'll let you go.
No. So yeah, I mean, anything with this character, I think, is comedy gold. I'm talking about Russ Hanneman. He is kind of the eccentric billionaire that ends up investing in Pied Piper when nobody else will be. And he's known as just kind of, you want to stay away from him because he's crazy and he pisses away his money and everything like that. And he's just a huge fan of being a billionaire because he put radio on the internet. That's what he keeps saying. So Russ Hanneman, I believe he's, the actor who plays him is Dino Stamenopoulos or something like that. But anyways, so he's kind of watching So he's kind of watching the team try and get together this huge, I don't exactly remember what's happening, but basically they're working with a porn company to back up their entire data. And they suddenly start realizing that all the data is just rapidly getting deleted again and again and again. And they think they're being hacked by somebody that Richard and Guilfoyle had screwed over earlier in the episode. And they find out that the reason that it's getting deleted is because Russ had put his giant handle of his own tequila that he calls the Tres Comas tequila, or maybe it's bourbon or something, whiskey maybe, but he's put it on the delete key of a keyboard and it's just deleting all the data just completely manually. And I probably completely butchered that description, but it is one of the funniest scenes, and it is so just hilarious that they're thinking that it is these really complex problems when it's something as stupid as just being with the wrong person and investing with the wrong company. So I think that's another great lesson that Silicon Valley makes again and again.
I just want to take a quick moment to highlight, to appreciate the hilarity of Russ Hanneman. This guy is, he is so vulgar and racist and enthusiastic for everything that Richard wants to do, for the most part, until they disagree on something. But he, it's so, I don't know how else to describe him. Like, he's eccentric. He's obsessed with being a billionaire. There's an episode where he's like, oh my God, I'm no longer a billionaire.
Yeah, he's like, I've lost everything that matters.
And it turns out he still has
like 900 like million 900
990 something, yeah. But I guess
I just love that he is he's not a villain in the same way that Gavin Belson is, but he's almost this like unstoppable chaotic force that is not necessarily doing anything maliciously. Like, he's not trying to screw anyone over, really, in the same way that, you know, Gavin Belson explicitly does things to fuck Richard over. But Russ is just, he's just too in his own way and too in the way of everybody else, because he's just this crazy eccentric person. And he's one of those characters that, like, I will remember as an iconic character forever, even though there are seasons where he's got maybe one episode or one scene. And he's one of my favorite characters on the show just because of the performance that he gives. And every single time he's on screen, you're just like, all right, what is this guy going to say? What is he going to introduce that these characters have to figure out? I think he's a really great character.
He is a fantastic reoccurring character, yeah. And Tres Comas, like, I'm not a drinker, but I would totally buy that just because it looks so photogenic.
Yeah.
That's a great logo. It's a great name for an alcohol. It's just, it's Tres Comas.
Yeah, and even just, like, the idea of, like, a white billionaire having a company that is three commas in Spanish for no reason is so, it feels like it was something that would happen, you know? I feel like this show does that again and again, where everything is ridiculous, but it's also ridiculous in a very realistic way. Like, he's a character that's dialed to 11, but everything that he does is believable. Like, you could believe that there's a company actually called Tres Comas, and the person who owns it is some 35-year-old coked up billionaire, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the best part is, we're gonna see more of him again in, like, season, what, 4 or 5? Definitely 6.
Absolutely.
Oh, fucking Russ Hanneman. Moving on to season 3. So, one of the blunder that I chose was the VC company that invests in Pied Piper, called Reviga. Lori Bream, who works with Monica, or who supervises Monica, she's above Monica, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Lori Bream fires Richard as CEO, and thus appoints this new guy called Jack Barker as CEO. And then this leads to a domino effect that because Barker and Richard, like, nobody likes the guy, right? Like, he's older, he's thinking more antiquated, because he wants them to pursue this box idea versus the platform idea that they originally wanted to do. And, like, he's just so stubborn and he doesn't listen to his engineers. And, you know, as CEO, you should be listening to your engineers, you're a tech company. But so because Barker and Richard and co, they're all clashing about this product that they're going to put out into place, like, this takes away from, like, the realistic thing that the Pied Piper should have done, is market research. because the platform ends up failing, right? They don't have enough users, yeah. active daily users. And the platform is basically, it's too difficult for your average Joe or Jane. And after the platform releases, they finally have focus groups to like figure out what is the matter with the product. And I have my master's in marketing, and one of the things I enjoy about marketing is learning about market research. How profitable is your product going to be? Who does it resonate with? Is it a product that resonates more with like the 18 to 24 age range? Do men like it more? Do women like it more? What functionalities does your product have, and how should you essentially market the product based on the findings of your focus groups and such and such? I'm not going to get too into it, but as you can tell, it's something that I really enjoyed learning about when I was in school. And I was just like, man, all they had to do was do this research before releasing the product, right? Rather than clashing, the realistic way was to do the market research, figure out, okay, are we going with the box? Are we going with the platform? But obviously, you know, this is television. They're not going to be that realistic about it. It's more fun to do the clashing, right?
Yeah.
So this mistake, the failure of the platform leads to Jared making a decision on his own to buy fake users from Bangladesh. And I feel kind of dumb to admit this, but I didn't realize that was a thing. I didn't know you could buy fake users from a click farm in a third world country.
Yeah, so I had heard about that, but I didn't really know exactly how it works. And I thought that that episode where it's revealed that Jared is buying fake users ends with this really brilliant and really well shot montage of a guy in Bangladesh waking up and going to his job where he is just making fake users for Pied Piper in this giant room of people who are probably doing the same thing for dozens of other companies. There were so many things that like your talk just now reminded me of in season three, because you know I didn't rewatch the entire show before doing this. I just watched rewatched the last season, but man, I wanna take a moment to again appreciate another like great character from a guest star, which is Stephen Tobolowsky playing Jack Barker. I think that character is a fantastic character as a villain, because he is not like your traditional Gavin Belson villain. He's not actively trying to sabotage anything, but he's a villain in his own right, and he's a specific type of CEO that actually exists and is a completely different force than anything that Pied Piper has, you know, faced up to this point. And I think that that's the best part about these earlier seasons, is that, yes, I think one of the flaws that this show has, and one of the criticisms that I see a lot with this show, is that it's, oh, it's just failure after failure after failure, you know, and it's like something goes wrong and then they figure it out, and then something goes wrong and then they figure it out. The show can feel very recursive and cyclical at times, but I think what's great about these first couple seasons is that it feels new, even though it is sort of samey over and over again. And that comes a lot from these supporting characters.
Oh, yeah. And I just want to say one quick thing about the cycle of problem, solution. That's very much like real life. Every yeah. day we have a new problem that we find a solution for, whether we work for a tech company or not. The level of drama varies,
right.
varies substantially, but, I mean, I feel like that's just television, you know, that's not necessarily a, Silicon Valley thing.
Yeah, I suppose, it does feel like a lot of shows though will have kind of, especially when they are these like seasons 1 to 6, that it feels like they're going in a direction and they're trying to get somewhere, even if there's some cyclical nature to it. And I think certainly older shows have a lot more cyclical repeats when there were like, okay, there's 26 episodes. We literally need to do something 26 times. So obviously there's going to be some repeats. I think what feels a little bit different about this show, at least in my opinion, is that season 3 and 4, it feels like they're kind of starting, they're almost restarting in a way, because of, you know, pivoting. And it is very realistic in terms of this is actually what happens in the real world, but it almost feels like the show doesn't exactly know where it wants to end up, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, wait, it does, because they renew it every season up until they decide that season 6 will be the last one. So I guess from a writing standpoint, you want to make the story so that you've got at least two options on how you want to end it in case season 3 was going to be the last season, right?
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, that's a great point, Madi.
Yeah, it sort of feels a little wheel spinny in the middle seasons, but that definitely doesn't mean that it's bad TV or anything like that. It just does feel like, oh, okay, so I thought we were getting somewhere with this middle out stuff. Oh, now we're going to move on to something else totally different. That feels a little weird, but I think you're right. It is very realistic in terms of what actually happens in Silicon Valley. These companies pivot all the time, so... My example, or my what are we calling these? Sorry.
Mistake, mistakes. Blunder, flop.
Yeah. So my mistake is similar, or kind of another smaller mistake, but it's, well, not really. Actually, this is a pretty bad mistake. So at some point when Jack Barker is the CEO before he gets fired, their plan is to kind of make the platform secretively instead of doing Jack Barker's box idea. And so they have this whole plan of how they're going to do everything, you know, under Jack Barker's nose. And they have all these files that they're going to plan to do. And the day after they finally make this plan and they're going to start doing it, they come into the office and Richard trips on a cord that's on the ground and all the files of their secret plan spill all in front of all of the important people in the company, and they get completely busted immediately. And it was just really funny because you spent all this time developing this really, what I thought was interesting and well-developed plan, and you're like, okay, here we're going. We know what's happening for the rest of the season. And then 5 minutes later, Richard fucks up and it's completely shattered. I think it was really funny for me.
And all because Richard didn't have a shredder at home.
Right.
Yeah, he was like, Dinesh is like, why'd you bring these papers here? It's like, oh, well, I was going to shred them, but the shredder's here.
Yeah.
Like, all you had to do was order a shredder off Amazon. Oh, Richard.
Side note, in season 3, it also has the whole where Gavin is trying to make a rival box and he wants to sign his name on the box. So he hires professional signatures and lets Hooli vote, like Hooli employees vote on which signature it is. And the signature that they end up choosing is one that looks like a penis. And I just think it's really funny, really juvenile humor, but it, you know, and Gavin has no idea that it looks like a penis. It's a whole thing.
It is so good. Because it's so obvious because the B is what makes the balls.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, how? It's just so obvious. And yeah. Like, even his closest advisors are like, take a quick glance and they're like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And like, I think before they decided to make it a contest with the Hooli employees, Gavin was upset because the artist wanted his signature on Gavin's signature art, right?
Yeah.
And then Gavin says, in what world does a signature have a signature? And Banksy was like, oh, well, it's not negotiable. And then It's like the logo thing again back in season one. You wasted all this money paying an artist to create something for you, and you end up doing the cheaper thing.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that penis signature.
It's so funny. It's such a simple joke. I think that's another great thing about this show is that it's not afraid to get a little lowbrow when it needs to and just mm-hmm. have a good old classic joke that it just works. I don't know what to say.
Anything else from season 3 that you wanted to bring up?
No, let's move on.
All right, okay. So moving on to season 4. At the beginning of season 4, our protagonists realize that they have to pivot again. And so the first pivot that they make, they actually break ties from Pied Piper. So Richard keeps Pied Piper, and then Dinesh takes up the CEO reins for his video app called Piper Chat. It's just funny because Dinesh would make a terrible CEO.
And he does.
He does make a terrible CEO. He lasts, what, 2 episodes?
Something like that. And not before, like, absolutely tanking the company, right? And
yeah. Oh, and so he gets all of these fines for Kappa because most of their users on Piper Chat are underage, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds. They're all using this app. They're violating the COPPA Act, so their penalty ends up totaling to $21 billion. And, like, that's for every time a new underage user joins the app and uses it, it adds on to their fine. So Dinesh's reaction when he realizes that is just amazing. And he didn't even just take the time to just look over the terms of service, but I kind of agree with him. No one reads that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah. But that mistake ends up fixing itself because Gavin decides to acquire Piper Chat. So then he's the one who takes on the fees.
Yeah, so this is when the show starts to make Gavin much less of an adversary and more of just like this. It feels like everything kind of just turns around for Gavin in the worst ways possible. And now you just get to watch Gavin kind of continuously screw up again and again and again. And I think it is just really fun to watch what was once kind of the formidable foe of seasons 1 and 2 kind of reduced into this dude who really has nothing. And it's fun.
I think season 4 is really when we start to see Richard becoming more like Gavin.
Yeah.
His team starts to hate the decisions that he makes, right? And the excuses for the bad decisions that he's making. And he screws Gavin over, right, with the patent thing. This is after Gavin comes back from Tibet and was like, hey, can we be partners again? And Gavin's like, no. Richard's like, no, fuck you. I'm gonna keep the patent and you can just go fuck yourself.
Is this the one where Richard also kind of screws up Nelson Baghetti by, like, taking advantage of how nice he is and his Stanford University thing, that he's like now a lecturer at Stanford University?
Oh, yeah, I think it is.
And that's sort of like the straw that breaks everybody's back and is like, look, you screwed over Big Head, like the nicest person ever.
He is literally your oldest friend and you just used him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, yes, you're correct. That's towards the end because they were trying to. They needed the server space to store this guy's data. And they had to move over to the university.
Can we do a Big Head appreciation couple minutes? Because that character is also there's so many characters in this show that are just so great. But I love Big Head's character and how he just falls upward again and again.
He's just so oblivious, and he even admits to his coworkers back at Hooli, like, my coding is pretty mediocre.
Yeah. And he becomes lecturer at Stanford. Yeah, like, God. And oh man, it's so funny. And he's such a good character. He's one of the characters I think that has great heart in the show, like along with Jared. But he's also a character that I know I said a lot of people are kind of dialed up to 11, but he's like the other iteration of that, in that his character is dialed almost all the way down to minus 11 or something, where they're just so mellow that everything they do is slow and just really funny for that reason. And I feel like there's kind of a handful of those characters throughout the show. The guy who operates the box farm, who just like says everything and then goes, okay. And just those types of characters I think are really great in this show too.
Oh yeah, John.
Yep. And the I don't know his name, but the guy that does the focus groups, who's just really calmly responds to each and every single person in the focus group. That type, yes, of humor kills me.
you gotta appreciate the mellow ones too.
Yeah.
they balance it all out.
Yeah, it does make for a good balance so that it's not like annoyingly hectic all the time.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to say, Nelson does pretty good for himself. Like, not just like ending up at Stanford, but he has a sweet ass house.
Yep.
And he basically starts his own incubator without even realizing he started his own incubator. And he made this one purchase that I thought was crazy, but it worked out really well because it went in his pool in the backyard, that giant tiki head.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's a mellow character, but like, he does appreciate
the finer things.
The finer things. Yeah.
Yeah. So my blunder for season four is when Ehrlich thinks that Jing Yang has a really good idea that involves Oculus, which is a VR tech. And Jing Yang ends up talking about Octopus, and it's like a seafood app or something. And I just think it's really funny because I remember, I don't know if it was at that time specifically, but certainly in the last couple of years, like, VR was this fad for a while where everybody was like, wow, VR is so cool and it's going to be the future. And so far it hasn't been, and I feel like nobody's talked about Oculus in the show since that kind of little arc with the guy from The Sixth Sense, whatever, Haley Joel Osment. And so I just really loved that little blunder, and it was really funny to have him have to like come up with an idea for an app when he didn't have one in front of the Ravika board. I thought that was great.
And Jin Yang's app idea was so elementary, but it ended up working out for Raviga when Ehrlich pivots the idea for the app to be like, what was it? It was originally, you scan it over like a hot dog and it tells you that it's a hot dog. And then Ehrlich turns it into,
It's like a way to filter out pornography in video image or in like images and stuff. So it'll scan images to see if there's pornography in it, and if not, it'll reject the image.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. But I was just like, oh God, when they used it on the pizza and it turns out the result was not hot dog.
Yeah.
So like, he created something that was binary. It's either hot dog or not hot dog. It's either a zero or a one.
Yep.
And then, oh man. Oh, Jin Yang.
So this is the last season where TJ Miller is on the show, right?
Yeah, yeah. I actually don't want to get into that too much, but
totally
TJ Miller was... I didn't follow the stories because I just wasn't comfortable with following the stories, but he was accused of sexual assault, right? And then the showrunners were like, no, you gotta go. So they had, and like he was doing drugs or something on set, so he wasn't always 100%. And so they just ended up parting ways after season four.
Yeah, I think he was really belligerent to all his coworkers and the creator of the show and Alec Berg and all of that stuff too. So mm-hmm. I think it was kind of an amalgamation of a whole bunch of different issues for sure. I guess what I do want to just, if you don't mind me quickly saying about it, is I like the way that they got rid of the character in a pretty reasonable and like funny way. Like, they wrote him out of the show in a relatively creative way that it doesn't feel like in season five. It's like, why isn't Ehrlich around, you know? So I appreciated that for, like, the fidelity and the continuity of the show.
Oh, for sure. And I feel like the creative way that they chose worked out because it's ambiguous, right? In the end, like, he left for Tibet, and then he just never came back.
Right.
And did he have his phone? I don't think so, because otherwise they just never heard from him. So he could have stayed in Tibet, or maybe he decided to just fuck off and just travel the world and didn't want anything to do with Silicon Valley anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it's up to us to interpret how he's doing post the show. I actually read an article. The co-creators actually offered T.J. Miller to return for three episodes in season five.
Oh, wow.
And he actually turned them down. So they wanted to give his character, like, full closure in season five. So they were like, oh, hey, we have an offer. You can come back for, like, three episodes and we'll give you a proper send-off. And apparently he rejected that, so they just kept it ambiguous.
Wow.
For the rest of the show.
Yeah, I did not know that. I was also thinking that maybe at some point in season six, in the last season, he would come back at some point or something, but, you know, just as like a cameo or something. They do mention him, but
yeah,
I guess
yeah.
Not.
Oh, that finale was really good, though. we'll get there.
Yeah.
Let's see. Are there other characters that we want to pay tribute to real quick before we move on to season five? We talked about Jin Yang for a little bit.
Yeah, I think Jin Yang is a hilarious character. I think he's best when he's with Ehrlich. I think he makes Ehrlich's character feel like there's something to it, and it's not just Ehrlich and a pretty insensitive portrayal of a Chinese person. I think their relationship and their like kind of antagonistic, almost Tom and Jerry-esque relationship is really fun to watch. And that is probably the only thing that I miss when TJ Miller is off the show, because Jing Yang doesn't have that as much with Richard and the others. So I don't think there's as much for Jing Yang to get to do in the later seasons as I think I would have liked.
Actually, that's a really great point that you brought up, Mati, because everyone else just kind of dismisses what Jin Yang says. They just think, oh, Jin Yang's doing something. Oh, okay, you said that. All right, I'm going to go do my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're right. He does have a good rapport. Or I mean, not really good rapport, but the relationship with Ehrlich, as you said, was made for good dynamics on television.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so moving on to season five. I actually chose two blunders for this season. The first one is kind of small. The second one's a really big deal. So the first one is Richard starts socializing with this guy named Ben, who is the COO of another company called Quiver. And Quiver is run by this guy named Dana. Dana is the guy who voices Tina on Bob's Burgers.
That's right, yeah.
His name is escaping me, but it's his same voice. Like, he doesn't do anything special for Tina. So when he comes onto Silicon Valley, like, I see his face, but then as soon as he starts talking, I'm like, oh my God, it's Tina in a guy's body. And, like, his character, Dana, is awkward like Richard. And it's just so funny how Jared's always trying to get Richard or Monica to, like, be friends with someone else who they obviously don't want to be friends with. Because, you know, Jared's just trying to be helpful, you know, start good relations. Richard's like, oh, yeah, it's some other guy who's a CEO. Okay. But he's really drawn to Ben, who has, Ben has really good charisma. And I think that's how he kind of drew Richard in. So they're, like, kind of dancing around this idea of whether Ben is going to come on as COO for Richard. Ben ends up fucking over Richard when he tells Dana, like, hey, Richard tried to pursue me, but I told him no.
Which is a complete lie, right? Like,
yeah. And then, like, Ben comes up to Pied Piper and he's like, so where's my desk? And Richard's like, this was never a done deal. And seeing how you screwed over your former CEO, why would I encourage that kind of behavior at Pied Piper? So just the fact that he was kind of socializing with Ben in the first place and kind of just dancing around that idea, I thought that was kind of a small blunder on Richard's part. And then the second mistake that I wanted to highlight is Dinesh inadvertently being the mole in Pied Piper for Hooli in Project Washburn, because Hoover, who is one of Gavin's advisors and, like, security guy or something, Hoover starts this Project Washburn where he has a mole called Jeff Washburn in Pied Piper. Dinesh ends up rooming with Jeff, and Jeff gets Dinesh to spill a few secrets via alcohol. And I'm just like, Dinesh would be the one to be the mole because he is just so talkative. But yeah, that was a big blunder for sure.
So season 5 for me is when I start to get a little fed up with Dinesh. I think he's really good in the earlier seasons, and then I feel like almost they feel like they need to kind of put Dinesh into almost an Ehrlich role where he's, like, kind of an insufferable asshole to basically everyone. And I found that season 5, when Dinesh was doing things, made me very angry in a way that very few characters on this show do. Like, there's a lot of characters that always do bad things, but I'm sort of like, oh, well, that's, you know, what they do. But something about Dinesh in season 5 really, like, just made me angry. I don't know if you felt that at all or if I'm just talking out of my ass at this point.
Oh, I mean, hey, that's why you're on the podcast. It's so we can talk about it. But I respectfully disagree. Yeah. I was never annoyed by Dinesh. I just found it... I mean, obviously he is being annoying to Guilfoyle, as always. But I thought that was just Dinesh being Dinesh. Maybe because Ehrlich was written out, Dinesh had more room to make these kind of mistakes from a storytelling perspective. I think you're right in that maybe the writers were trying to make him a sort of Ehrlich 2.0, but in his own Dinesh kind of way.
Yeah, I guess when I find Dinesh most useful as sort of a foil to Guilfoyle, it seems like the writers don't always know what his role in the company is. in a way that, you know, I feel like each and every one of the characters that's like the original six or whatever, each kind of has a specific role. And when they need characters to come and solve things or do things, they will give it to a character based on the traits that they have. And then Dinesh is sort of like the last one that they sort of, they have him step in when it doesn't make sense for Guilfoyle to do it or for Jared to do it or whoever. And it just feels like because he doesn't have that sort of like he's not as good of a coder as Guilfoyle, at least in like the way that I interpreted it. Maybe we're supposed to think that they're equal, but it seems like Guilfoyle has a lot more interaction and propels the like Richard forward and the company forward more so than Dinesh. So when he comes around and like acts like an asshole about Tesla and stuff to all these kind of lower employees, it rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to rationalize it, you know, in real time here, but it, something about his character in season five just really bothered me.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, that, if that's how you felt, that's how you felt.
Yeah. Well, thank you for letting me air it out.
Oh yeah. That's what we're here for. But I will say the Tesla thing was kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly funny. None of it is.
It's funny for sure. Yeah. Yeah, but like, it didn't like. Well, I guess it did. It did work out at the end because he got in his Tesla to find Colin, and they ended up saving the company.
Yeah, and they bribed a cop with it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah. Okay. Well, because I was gonna say, like, the Tesla thing was kind of a side thing. It didn't really add to the story, but no, I was wrong.
Right. Well, yeah. My blunder is on a side story, I guess. Then my blunder, I think, is it's really funny that Jing Yang tries to capitalize on the fact that Ehrlich is in Tibet, and he tries to show that Ehrlich is dead so that he can get Ehrlich's stock in Pied Piper. But then with Jing Yang becoming Ehrlich's beneficiary, he has to get all of the debt that Ehrlich has acquired from years and years and years. And I think that it's a good way to keep Jing Yang in the show and keep that kind of relationship to Ehrlich alive, even though they don't have TJ Miller. And I thought it was a pretty fun, like, just string of events where he gets a dead pig at one point, like a giant pig, and he's trying to pretend that the pig is Ehrlich. It's a really fun little mini side thing for Jing Yang to get to do.
The guy had 7 credit cards and none of them even had miles. Oh man. Well, hey, I mean, he got what he deserved, right? He really wanted the house. He wanted 10% of Pied Piper. But hey, with the good comes the bad.
Yeah, and he gets it. And, you know, good for Jing Yang, I guess.
Yeah. But I'm glad they did keep Jin Yang on the show even after Ehrlich left. Just because, I mean, one point is that we do need more diversity on the show, and right. Jin Yang is, you know, a person of color. But another thing is that he's just someone who ends up becoming useful later on towards the end with the encryption key.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, he's not just there for the sake of having somebody in the background. He still serves a purpose.
Yeah. And I guess if we want to maybe use this to transition into season six, I think season six does a really good job at making every single character have a role and do something that like ends up mattering, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. So moving on to our final season six. So my blunder is another thing that starts a domino effect. So Richard, like episode 2 of season 6, he goes to some event and meets this this character called Maximo. He's a corrupt investor from Chile. And because he's corrupt, like Pied Piper ends up buying Hooli, and Hooli itself had acquired this app called Foxhole. And because of that app, like, and them buying Hooli, it lowered the value of Pied Piper in general. And I forgot where I was going with this. My mind just went blank. Oh my God. Lowers the value of Pied Piper. Dinesh had to screw over his own cousin, Wajid, so that they would have money to buy Hooli. Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. Yeah. I thought that was a blunder. Just Richard not listening to Jared. Because Jared had refused Maximo's money.
Yeah. This is an interesting little chain of events that ends up not doing much. What do you think about what they do with Jared in this last season? This is the one thing, the whole thing with Gwart, where Jared kind of leaves and then comes back pretty quickly, in the sense that, like, if you didn't watch the first three episodes of season six, you would have never known that Jared had ever left the company.
I did not like what they did with Jared's character in the last season, but I think they just did it for the sake of, okay, we need to give Jared something to do. So one episode, he finds out who his birth parents are, meets them, and realizes that he was never wanted, which is really, really sad.
Yeah, jeez.
Because his birth parents did end up having another kid after they gave him up, and they named the kid Donald.
Yeah, those are like the worst people on the show, is Jared's birth parents. Holy crap. They were so, so terrible.
And, like, that was really sad for him. And then he finds someone else to kind of be a supporter for. And Gwart decides to dissolve her company and work for YaoNet US.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't know. I feel like Jared could have had a better purpose in season six. Like, the beginning of it was just kind of all over the place for Jared. So I thought it was just unnecessary drama.
Yeah, I think in general, season six in the first half is a little all over the place, because it doesn't seem like each of the previous seasons seems to have, like, some sort of central either antagonist or opposing force or something that they have to do. And season six almost feels like, well, we have all these other ideas and this is our last season, so let's just kind of pick a couple of them and make a season. And, like, each episode doesn't necessarily, like, relate to the one before it. And so, like, you've got this thing with Maximo that ends up not really mattering ultimately at the very end. And the season six, I think, it's not a bad season, but I think it's one of the ones that's a little more all over the place than the other previous seasons.
For sure. And I feel like in general, most TV shows will have a shitty last season.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the episodes that they talk about, or one of the episodes that they have, is when Richard hires, or, like, acquires Hooli, and he hires his old boss at Hooli. And that's my blunder, because I thought that was pretty funny, just because it ends up being resolved by Holden threatening Richard's old boss in some sort of vague way, in the same way that Jared threatened Holden in earlier seasons. And I guess we haven't really talked about Holden much, because he's not really important whatsoever. He's just like a side character. But I really like Holden's character. I think it's hilarious when Jared has somebody under him, because Jared is basically under everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's kind of cute to see Holden and Jared interact, because Jared is so fucking tall. Yep. He's so intimidating. And Holden's like this shorter, average looking guy, kind of dresses in the same way as Jared, maybe wears a little bit more vests than Jared does, but, like, they both want the same thing. They should be on the same side, but they're just not.
And I love how much power Jared has over Holden. Because, you know, you spend seasons and seasons showing that Jared really doesn't have any power over anybody else in the, like, the Piper Founders group. Like, you know, he's shit on by Dinesh, he's shit on by Guilfoyle, but basically everybody. And then Holden comes along and he just kind of puts all his energy into just, like, decimating this poor kid. And it's so funny. Like, when he's like, oh, why would anybody be mean to you? Are you a piece of shit, Holden? I really like angry Jared. That's the one part of season six that they do really good with Jared, is that they let him, like, lose his shit, which I thought was really funny to see.
Yeah, and normally he's just more passive angry than he is aggressive angry. Oh man. Do we want to touch on the series finale really quick? Because even though season six as a whole wasn't so great, and we didn't really know what direction they were going to go with, I felt like the series finale made up for the cons of season six.
Yeah. So rewatching it, I think the series finale worked a lot more for me than it did on the first go. And I think that was because the first time I watched it, I was pretty disappointed that it ended up not working out for them. Right? They made the company, they made the device, and it was sort of frustrating that after six seasons and what was in my life, like, you know, 4 to 5 years maybe, it kind of ultimately ended up in not working out. And as great as the season finale is, and as great as it is at kind of giving each of the characters its due and having all these callbacks and everything, I felt pretty fundamentally disappointed by that part of where the series went. But when I saw it a second time, knowing that that's where it was heading, I think the series finale worked on an emotional level a lot more for me, because I knew to expect that, oh, this isn't going to actually work out for them, but it does end up working out that they did everything that they wanted to do.
So season six came out December of last year. So it's been a few months.
Yeah.
So then I did my rewatch this week. I think the first time I saw the series finale, I was really sad that Pied Piper wasn't going to work out. So I was a little upset, but because they started off the series finale with this, like, 10 years in the future documentary style sit down interviews with all of our protagonists, it kind of made sense that it would end in a failure.
Yeah.
Because the documentary interviews were kind of hinting at that. I think the first time around I didn't pick up at it, but then the second time when they do that first sit down with Richard, like, just looking at his face 10 years later, like, you can tell, like, it didn't work out how they wanted it to be. And there was actually a quote from Guilfoyle in the series that I wrote down in my notes, and I'm gonna read it out loud, because I think it's a good quote to summarize the entire dilemma that they had. Guilfoyle said, "We built a monster. We need to kill it." Because at the end of the day, their AI was too successful to the point where it became dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, so it's almost funny that after seasons and seasons of kind of them fucking up again and again, they end up making something that's so good that they have to destroy it. And I mean, I get the irony in that, but there is sort of, just from a storytelling perspective, like, oh man, I really just want these guys that I've grown to love have their dreams met, you know? So there was certainly a level of disappointment on the first watch that I was like, this sucks. But as an actual series finale, and as, like, kind of an indictment of the Silicon Valley culture and everything, I think it does make sense for them to ultimately have to quash this thing that they've made.
Yeah. And I think it also, I just thought of something. I think it also makes sense realistically, because
yeah,
how many startups are actually successful?
Right. Very few, for what I know.
Yeah, like there's only one Google. Once you're a tech giant, you kind of stay the tech giant. And then it's really hard for newcomers to try to beat the giants, if that makes sense.
Right.
So I guess we were all invested as watchers to want our characters to succeed, but I wasn't too upset by the ending the first time around, because I thought at the end of the day it made sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it makes sense. So it's not like, definitely by any means, it's not a bad series finale. It's actually, as far as series finales go, pretty good, especially based on that other show from HBO that we shall not mention. So,
but I love that other show from HBO that we shall not mention. but that's another rabbit hole. So,
yeah.
Also, we get a return of Tres Comas.
Yes.
I feel like HBO should actually create Tres Comas so that we as fans can buy it and drink it.
Yeah. Would you buy it? I would buy it. Maybe it is out there. Who knows? Have you checked?
I actually have not checked, but I'm actually not a big drinker. Like, I physically cannot handle too much alcohol.
Oh, okay.
It makes my heart rate go really fast. It feels like I'll have a heart attack. It's a really crappy side effect of drinking. So because of that, I don't drink very much, but if I could, I would totally buy that.
Good news. I just Googled it. It is available. You can buy Tres Comas Tequila Añejo, the brand Tres Comas Tequila, for $46 on sipwhiskey.com. And the like description is, Russ Hanneman here. This is my own brand, Tres Comas. Do you know what it means in Spanish? Three commas, as in three commas in $1 billion. My accountant has informed me that this is ultra premium tequila from a family-run distillery set in rural Jalisco. Tres Comas is aged in American oak barrels with subtle notes of vanilla, spice, and toasted oak finish that is best enjoyed neat or on the rocks.
Oh my God.
And so the bottle has a picture. It says Tres Comas and a picture of Russ Hanneman on it.
I'm surprised HBO isn't doing this.
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. It is amazing. Oh, well, hey, there you go. Y'all can get yourselves a bottle of Tres Comas.
Maybe I will. Maybe I will.
Well, that is an excellent way to end the episode on HBO's Silicon Valley. So thank you again, Mati, for taking the time to come on and talk about Silicon Valley with me.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Chinlin. This was awesome. And I loved just kind of like reliving the whole show in this last hour, just talking about it. It's an awesome show. And thank you again for having me. I'm really honored to be here.
You know what? It really is rewatchable.
Yeah.
I binged it all in a week. I was like, oh, this is awesome. But yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast. Learn more about us on Twitter at BingeablesPod.
If you enjoyed this episode, head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We would very much appreciate it.
Until next time. The Bingeables podcast is produced by patron Raymond G. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin McLeod.